I'm Jordan Evans, who just happens to be good at football.
Yeah.
Because a lot of guys, their entire identity is in that.
Yeah.
And if you take a step back and look at it, it really makes no sense. The NFL stands for not for long.
Yeah. Okay?
I know everyone thinks the National Football League is not for long, but you have 3 years maybe.
Yeah.
And then you're never playing again. Why would you put your identity in something that's not everlasting?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it definitely tempts you because that's literally what the whole game is about.
Yeah.
And even the guys that do good, I'm not saying, I'm not trying to take away from it, but it's still some form of self-promoting.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Authentic Christian Podcast. I'm Aaron. This is Jordan Evans. And today we're talking about being a Christian and an athlete. All right. So in this episode, I have a friend of mine for the last few years named Jordan Evans.
Yes, sir.
I'll give Jordan a bio, but I'll tell you this. The first time we talked, you emailed me.
Right.
And we had been like talking about some Bible stuff. And then you mentioned something about playing football. And in the course of that conversation, I was like, where did you play? And you said, like, you know, with the Bengals. I was like, oh, I've heard of them.
Right.
Bengals. And then I remember getting on YouTube and searching your highlight film. And I don't know if you remember this, like the very first thing I saw was like a fumble or pick six return against the West Virginia Mountaineers, mm-hmm. which is where I'm from, WVU. Right. And I responded back. I was like, I don't know if we can be friends anymore. But anyway, so yeah, Jordan, let me read a bio for Jordan. Thanks for being here, man.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Okay, here's a bio. Jordan Evans is a former NFL linebacker from Norman, Oklahoma, who starred at the University of Oklahoma before being selected by the Cincinnati Bengals in the sixth round of the 2017 NFL draft. He was a standout defender for the Oklahoma Sooners. He earned all Big 12 honors and was known for his athleticism, instincts, and versatility. He spent five seasons in the NFL with the Bengals, played in 65 NFL games, contributing on defense and as a key special teams player. Throughout his career, he recorded 127 tackles, 3.5 sacks, 2 interceptions, and 7 passes defended. Off the field, he also earned an MBA from the Kelly School of Business at Indiana University and has remained committed to leadership, personal development, and mentoring others. And I would say, most importantly, he's a faithful Christian.
Yes, sir.
So I'm thankful to have you here today. Thanks for being here.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Yes, sir.
All right. So let's just start like a little bit of a life story, right? Tell us where you're from,
right,
and where you grew up, that sort of thing.
Yes, sir. So I'm from Norman, Oklahoma. That's where the Sooners are. My dad actually played there, so he decided to raise his family there as well. So I grew up there, stayed in the Norman public school system, went to Norman North High School. And from there, recruiting process, things that happened, and I ended up at the University of Oklahoma. Played there 4 years, got a degree, and went on about my football career.
So when you were in high school, did you play any other sports other than football or just football?
I did. So I really was a multi-athlete guy always growing up. Yeah. I always loved sports. I was one of those kids that, you know, they had to bring me inside, not force me outside. Yeah. So I grew up playing every sport. Once I got to high school, I was primarily basketball, football, and track. Basketball was my first love.
Hey, me too, man.
Yeah, basketball was my first love. I quit my sophomore year, and I actually had some tears in my eyes when I quit. But football was looking good for me, so I just continued football and track my last 2 years.
That's awesome. Great. Okay, right. So you played multiple sports. Now, obviously, you played the NFL.
Yes,
so
sir.
When did you start to see football sort of taking, you know, primary? Was it just that was the one that, even though basketball was your first love, you excelled more in?
Or right.
Of course, your dad playing Division I, big school, too. Did that influence it? Or
it was definitely around my junior year. So I was still kind of stuck on basketball. Junior comes around. I got moved to a new position. I wasn't sure how it was going to work out. I ended up having a really, really good junior year. And actually, after the playoff game, my dad, who played at a Division I level, and he got drafted and played 1 year in the NFL, he straight up told me, he's like, hey, son, if you want to do this, you can play at the next level. And so I made that choice that offseason to put more time into football.
Yeah.
Building up, because I was playing outside linebacker at that time, to focus in on that, because I started getting recruited at the end of my junior year. And so once I got the first, you know, call from a Division I program, I was like, you know what? I think it's time to focus on football. And so that happened my junior year in high school. And honestly, a very similar thing happened my junior year in college with my dad as well. After I had a really good season, my dad was like, hey, son, I think you can play at the next level. So kind of both of those cases happened.
Okay. So how did you end up, you know, from high school to college? How did you end up at Oklahoma? Was that where you wanted to go? Or
actually, I was a huge Virginia Tech fan growing up. Everybody that's from Norman that actually knows me knows I was a big Michael Vick fan growing up.
I think anybody that played NCAA college football was a Mike Vick fan.
Yes,
you could just, if you pick Virginia Tech, you just run all over everybody. It's so annoying when you played somebody that used
I think I might have been the only kid in Norman with Virginia Tech gear.
Yeah.
So I really want to go Virginia Tech, but I wasn't a big-time recruit. At that time, it was Power 5 schools, P5, but now it's P4. My only P5 offer that I can think of was Oklahoma.
Okay.
Because if OU never offered me, I was actually on my way to go play safety in New Mexico.
Okay.
And literally right after our semifinal game, right before the state championship game, Bob Stoops offered me at the Bedlam game. And I remember getting the offer. I mean, I was super excited. I mean, it's University of Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a Norman kid.
Yeah.
My dad played there. But at the same time, I was thinking like, oh, you know.
Maybe OU offered me. Gonna call me now.
So like, I remember I went to my
leverage
head coach.
Leverage this offer.
Exactly. I'm like, if OU offers me, that's one of the top programs in all history.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Virginia Tech's got to offer me. And I remember I went to my head coach, was like, hey, yo, send my tape to Virginia Tech. And after like 2 days, he goes, son, like, quit playing around. Like, they don't want you. You better commit. So I was like, I committed to OU like within like 2-3 days.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, growing up in West Virginia, my dad would take me to the WVU football games.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like such, you know, it's like where you grew up. So I bet that was definitely cool.
No, it definitely was. Like, once I committed, because I was being a little bit maybe like defiant, because like, I remember in interviews, they would always be like, oh, that's Scott's son. You know, he's following his dad's footsteps. And I was like, no, I'm making my own.
Yeah.
And so when OU offered me, I was a little bit hesitant because I was going to like really look like I'm following my dad's footsteps.
Yeah.
But once I committed, it was obviously the best decision that I could have made.
Well, I think I'll say most men, myself included, can look back and remember the time in high school where like, you know, like my dad played baseball at West Virginia University. He played at a bigger school than I ever played at. And he was really good. And it's that defiant age where you're like, your dad tells you things and you're like, my dad didn't know anything.
Right.
And then like you become a grown up and you realize like your dad knew.
Yeah, he knew a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one day, like, you know, me now, I have 4 little kids. You become a dad and you're like, ah, I see what he was going through. Like, you're trying to keep your kids alive and your kids are doing these. You're like, I'm trying to help you here. You
right.
know? Okay. So you get through high school, you get the offer, you go to Oklahoma. What was the experience like at Oklahoma? I mean, were you somebody who always excelled? Like, for instance, I, in high school, I can think of a guy named, you know, Brandon, if he ever watches this, but he was always the top athlete. Never, like, he was so athletic, he was always the cream of the crop, whether he was 12 or 15 or 18.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you come into college, like, as a freshman, like, you were going to be a starter, or did you have to, like, grind and work?
No, I had to work. So, yeah, my entire playing career, I was a little more of the underdog.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't start JV. I mean, I didn't start varsity until my junior year in high school.
Yeah.
So I wasn't a big time guy. That was one of those guys that like, oh, he has potential, but I never was that dude. And then when I came to OU, I actually had like a D-minus grade.
Okay.
And the scouting report on me from all the recruiting profiles out there was basically saying I was just going to be a scout team guy and a backup.
How's that feel?
Honestly,
to have
it was
other
frustrating.
People that don't know you,
yeah,
like
it was,
just judging you, yeah. Like this is how he's going to turn out.
Especially because half those people that write those articles probably never even played a down before, you know. But I mean, it was a little annoying.
It's
and
like, where'd you play? It's like Madden,
right? Exactly,
Xbox.
Like NCAA 2003. Like, brother, doesn't count, you know. But it was feel, you know. Yeah. And so, and honestly, a very similar situation happened in my transition to the league, which I'm sure we'll bring up in a second.
Yeah.
But at the collegiate level, it was. No one thought I was gonna make it. Actually, there's a lot of stuff going around that only reason why I got an offer from OU was because my dad.
Oh yeah, I bet.
And that was so irritating because no one even knew who my dad was until I started getting recruited because he stayed out the limelight.
Yeah,
like, he's a big name, but he stayed out the limelight. So it was tough. But my freshman year, I worked up to be a second string and play special teams. My sophomore year, I started, and I started because a buddy of mine got falsely accused of something.
Yeah.
And it led to me getting an opportunity to start junior year. We had a battle. I won it out. Senior year, obviously won it out. So I believe everything that happened at the college level, I literally fought for.
Yeah.
Because I had to.
Well, I think it teaches you about, you know, adversity too. Mm-hmm. Like when you're used to being the underdog and you can push through and you just have patience, you realize if I work hard, you can pass people, you know, that maybe have more athletic talent, but if you just work harder, you can, you can pass them.
Exactly.
Okay. So, were you all Big 12 your senior year?
Senior year.
Okay, so you're playing in Oklahoma. You scored some touchdowns against WVU.
Right.
I'm never going to forget that.
It's all good. I had two versus y'all.
A two?
Yes,
oh, man. Okay. Were they both fumble recoveries or pick
one
six?
One was a fumble recovery and one was a pick six.
All right. Well,
I like West Virginia.
Yes, I bet you do. I bet you like playing them. Yeah. Okay, so you're having a good, you know, junior. Now, were you all Big 12 senior year?
Right, and I had like, I think I was maybe second team or so, I think I was second team all Big 12 my junior year.
Okay, so junior year and senior year, things are going really well. You're right. Playing well. You're all Big 12. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the transition. What was the transition like? You know, I think I watched an interview where you were talking about how you were all Big 12, but then you like didn't even get invited to the combine.
Right.
Like this seems to me, if you're all Big, because Big 12 is a great conference.
Yes, sir.
How is it that you can be all Big 12 and not get invited to the combine?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out. You know, but like you said, my sophomore year, I think I got honorable mention. My junior year, I got second team. My senior year, I was all Big 12. I mean, I think I led the nation or I was top of the nation with interceptions. You know, I had a really, really good year. I did have a dip.
Yeah.
You know, I had a lot of growing pains my senior year.
Yeah.
And I started balling. And I still won't forget to this day, I was in the car with my best friend. And my agent told me to call this, like, the NFL Combine hotline to know if he got your invite.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like...
Like, hey, you must have forgot.
Yeah, I got my invite. My boy went to a D2 and the linebacker from his D2 got an invite. So I'm definitely thinking like,
oh, wow,
I'm going to get an invite. And I call and they say, oh yeah, unfortunately you didn't get an invite, but just so you know, 60%, I just hung up. And I was just like, all right, I'm not listening to y'all. That had me hot, but I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
But kind of like I was saying, there was fuel that led me into college. That was a fuel that led me into my combine training.
Okay.
And so for like the next 2 months, man, I was just
going after a guy from division. Yeah. I mean, I played division two. There's a huge difference in talent. Sorry if you're watching this.
No disrespect.
Yeah. No disrespect. Like it's, you know, a whole nother level. So you don't get invited to the combine, but you're still drafted. So how did that work out?
Right. So technically, I think it's the top, I forget the exact number, 300 players or whatever it is that go to the combine every year.
Okay.
The combine is definitely what you want to go to because it's just kind of like the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
You're on national television.
Yeah.
You're showcasing your talents in the 40s and stuff like that. And so I wanted to go, and it might've been more of a pride kind of thing of why you want to go.
Well,
but ultimately, ultimately.
But still, like you want to get drafted.
Exactly.
All Big 12
right.
linebacker, right?
Right, for sure.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be there?
Right, exactly. But ultimately, just because you go there does not guarantee drafting. A lot of guys still get drafted at their pro days.
Okay.
So pro days is more the individual at your local college.
Okay.
And you do the same things, but scouts come to you.
Okay, so like a bunch of NFL scouts come to Oklahoma.
Right.
Okay.
Now, at the NFL Combine, all the scouts are there, all the agents. I mean, it's the big one. Big bang.
Okay.
But at the college level, depending on how good of a program you are or the talent that's coming out of there determines how many scouts are going to be there.
Yeah.
Well, for me, luckily, I had other really, really, really good players coming out.
Yeah.
We're a prestigious university.
Yeah. Oh,
so
yeah.
All 32 NFL teams were there.
Okay.
And I absolutely shined on my pro day.
Awesome. Okay. So tell us about the draft. You know, like I since I started having little kids, I don't watch as much sports, but like I know how the draft works. I mean, you see guys sitting in their living room or sitting in a big, you know, conference hall or something. And then, so what was it like for you? What were you expecting?
You know, I went in there with low expectations.
Yeah.
A lot of times when you get your hopes up and things don't go through is really, really dip. And I try not to do that. My emotion, try to stay pretty even keeled.
Yeah.
It was just me and my dad watching it. My mom, and my two sisters were headed to Dallas for a basketball tournament. And so I came home. It was just me and my pops at the house. We watched every minute of it.
Yeah.
Which was horrible.
Did you think you were getting drafted? Like, did you think you were?
I had an idea, like, I should get drafted. I mean, I heard anywhere from third to the seventh round.
Yeah.
But that's a wide spectrum.
How many rounds are there?
Seven.
Okay. Oh, right. So there was a chance that maybe you don't.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So I'm going in there with the hopes of getting drafted, but the expectation of, like, just prepare not to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to...
Hope for the best.
Exactly. And so I went in there like that. I watched every draft. Like I said, it kind of sucks because it's long. You see all these other guys get drafted before you who you think you're better than.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sixth round comes around, 193rd pick. At the time, Marvin Lewis was the head coach and he calls me and he drafts me. And it's kind of a surreal moment because my dad's from Cincinnati.
Oh, cool.
My grandfather went to Xavier. He grew up a Bengals fan all his life.
Okay.
And I, you know, I remember like, yo, dad. Yeah. And he like jumps up, turns it up. I get the call, my name across the screen, and I run around the house. And it was a pretty cool moment. I ain't gonna lie.
That is cool.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So your dad was excited about it too.
Definitely.
I bet, you know, I'm sure he was just thrilled because, you know, watching you, my dad would always tell me, like, you know how nervous you get when you play? And I was like, I mean, once like the game starts, I'm really not nervous anymore. And my dad would say like, well, I'm nervous the whole game.
Right, right.
You know? Sure. So I can imagine he was probably even more nervous than you were, like wanting his little boy to succeed.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so you get drafted, sixth round?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so what happens after that?
Right, so then you go to a rookie mini camp, okay. OTAs. You have your summer off and you come back for fall camp. Okay. That's essentially what you do all throughout OTAs, fall camp, and things of that matter. And so as a six-round draft pick, a lot of time you're the first guys to go.
Yeah.
You get cut.
Yeah.
So again, I'm coming in.
Yeah, so you're just because you get drafted, it doesn't mean you're going to be a player necessarily.
Exactly. Unless you're like a first three rounds because you have a lot more guaranteed money initially in with your signing bonus.
Yeah, they're going to take some, they're not going to cut you.
Yeah, they're not going to cut you. You at least got 3 to 4 years on that unless you're doing absolutely horrible or being a detriment to the team. Sixth round, though. You know, so again, the motivator is, hey, I went sixth round.
Some guys underdog again.
Right. Everyone thinks, oh, he's just going to be a P squad guy. And again, I'm like, you know, I had to fight every single year to make the team. And when I reflect on my career, I can happily say that I was never a P squad. I was never cut in the NFL. I was never inactive outside of being unhealthy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you go, you make it through camp. Mm-hmm. You played 5 seasons.
Yes, sir.
How did the 5 seasons go?
They were up and down, you know.
Did you start all 5 seasons?
No, sir. No, sir. I started the most in 2018.
Okay.
And then sporadically throughout the rest of my, or sporadically throughout 2019, 2020. 2021, I wasn't a starter, but I was a heavy rotational guy. Now, I started in all phases of special teams all 5 years. Oh, that was really where I started.
Kickoff or
kickoff, punt return, kickoff return.
Okay. So you're on all defense or offense?
Say again?
Were you kicking or receiving?
Oh, both on all that.
It's so you just try to drill the return guy.
Yeah, everything, all of it, all of it. So that's where I was really my bread and butter. I was a core special teams guy.
Okay.
And I would start some games or I was like a special package kind of guy.
Okay.
Defensively. And so that was my 5 years. Again, a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
Not playing as much as I thought I should or getting a lot of opportunities to start, maybe underperforming. And then not getting, you know, it was a lot. I mean, I could probably spend an hour speaking about that, which I'm not, but it taught me a lot and things that matter. When I reflect on it, I wish I was more appreciative of the highs and the lows.
Yeah.
Because it goes by so fast. And in 2021, when I started really getting my groove, being okay with whatever came towards me.
Yeah.
My season got cut short.
Yeah. Now is it your knee?
ACL. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, I don't know much about, I mean, I know from playing, you know, high school athletics, like guys would tear their ACL and then go through surgery. I remember one of my buddies tore it on the first, I didn't play football, but he did. And he tore it the very first kickoff of the very first home game, his senior year. Of course, didn't get to play any more football.
Right.
So what is like the prognosis or expectation, you know, like in baseball, you tear your, you have to have Tommy John surgery. Everyone's like, oh, he's going to throw harder.
Right.
With your knee injury, is that something in the NFL that most guys expect to come back from? Or is that one that when it happens, you're like, oh, my days are numbered now.
You know, it's technically in football because your career is already short and we deal with so many injuries. The more injuries you get, the more you're like, oh, how much longer has he got?
Yeah.
So I always mess around and say like the ACL is like the cardinal sin of football.
Yeah.
Even though, yes, we come back stronger. I mean, I went to an institute in Pensacola, Florida. They're known for getting us back together.
Yeah.
We always come back better. Like my left knee that I tore is honestly way better than my right knee that's never had surgery.
Yeah.
But the issue is now when you get to the, I guess the politics side of it.
Yeah.
You know, I was on a fifth year.
Yeah.
I was a prove it deal. I'm an older veteran guy. I'm more expensive than rookies.
Yeah.
So now that I blew my knee out, it's kind of like your damaged goods.
Yeah.
And so some guys get redemptions and get the chance to go back. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case for me.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you're injured and you're trying to figure out, do you retire, you know? And so what was your last year did you play?
So my last year in the NFL was the 2021-2022 season when the Bengals went to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So that was just...
Did you get to go?
I got to go.
Yeah.
I got to go to the AFC Championship and Super Bowl. But like it was like a bittersweet moment because like my team is winning, but I'm not like a part of it.
Yeah.
Because even in the meetings and stuff, I'm just in rehab.
Yeah.
I go home, come back from rehab, stuff like that. Like Super Bowl morning, I actually remember like I woke up and I had to call my dad. I had tears in my eyes. I was crying because I was like, dude, like.
You worked your whole life.
Yeah, I worked my whole life.
To get to the pinnacle of the Super Bowl and your knees hurt and you can't play.
And I can't play. But also that whole year, I had so many emotions because I'm thinking like, I'm very aware of what's going on. Like, yo, I had to fight every year to be here.
Yeah.
They always draft the guys to replace me. I mean, I wasn't like their favorite person. Now that I'm blowing my knee out, I'm on a 1-year deal. What's going to happen to me?
Yeah.
And so I went into free agency. They didn't sign me back. Mm-hmm. I worked out for like 10 different NFL teams.
Yeah.
They all sent me home. Mm-hmm. So then I went into the XFL and the UFL.
Okay.
Where I then played a little bit, had some good games, but ultimately was sidelined again with a whole bunch of injuries, which led to my retirement.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and you're what, 30?
31.
Yeah. I remember whenever we first talked in email, you're like, yeah, I played football. I'm retired. And I was like, how old is this guy? Yeah. And you're like 29. Like, whoa. It's funny to hear you say that. Cause like 2018 is when I started at GBN.
Yes, sir.
So I'm thinking about me sitting at my office and like, you're playing in the NFL.
Right.
Like,
yes, sir.
You know, that's pretty cool. Year, huh? Oh right, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So who are some of the guys off camera? Like, hey, you play. So who are some of the guys that you played against, and then who are some of the like guys that people who are fans would, of course, they probably know this,
right?
Because I'm like not that knowledgeable about football, but who are some of the guys you played with that people are like, this guy's a legend, you know?
Right?
This guy's really well known.
AJ Green, yeah, we got a bulldog in the house.
It's right.
Geno Atkins,
okay,
bulldog. Those two guys most likely would be Hall of Famers.
Wow.
Andy Dalton, Tyler Eifert were top tier guys. I played with great linebackers like Vontaze Burfict. Great DB like Pac-Man Jones.
Hey.
Yeah, a lot of people know him. Titans, right?
Yeah, right. West Virginia guy?
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah, WVU. That's what,
yeah, right. Everyone from West Virginia knows Pac-Man.
Yeah, right.
For good reasons and then
bad. Yeah, right. So Pac-Man. And then I played with Joe Burrow.
Okay.
Joe Mixon. That's okay. Like my best friend to this day.
That's awesome.
Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins. So a lot of top tier guys. Yeah. And obviously I played against the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
You know, I played against the Tom Brady's, the Pat Mahomes, the Drew Brees. Wow. Philip Rivers, Ben Roethlisberger, Cam Newton. So, I mean, you know, once you get to that kind of level, even though it's sometimes hard to realize you're there, because I won't forget, I had like a fanboy moment my rookie year, like two times where I'm like, kind of like, whoa, like J.J. Watt's right there. And I'm like, dude, this is defensive player of the year. And then in the year they introduce, I'm playing at the Ravens, Terrell Suggs comes out and he's this all pro guy. So like stuff like that was pretty unique that I was able to say, like, you know, I'm in the same arena as some of the best athletes of all time. So.
Yeah. You know, of course, one of the main reasons that, you know, we have you, we wanted to talk with you is of course the athletic achievements are amazing. Hmm. But, you know, one of the things that a lot of, you know, there's tons of young Christian athletes.
Right.
And a lot of young Christian athletes want to play on the biggest stages. I mean, I'm sure there are people that will watch this. I mean, I know there are guys that will watch this that are college athletes. I know there's high school athletes. There's probably gonna be a lot of kids who are, you know, 10 to 12 who are playing, you know, peewee football, and their just goal in life, like when you were younger, is to just play at the highest level. You know, I want to talk about your faith growing up. You know, when you were growing up, you grew up in a Christian home.
Yes, sir.
What were some of the things that, you know, maybe one or two things, some of the things your parents did that had maybe the biggest impact on your faith individually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think one, I have to give a shout out to both my mother and my father.
Yeah.
They've been married for 30 years. They didn't have everything right when they were coming out of it, but they did the best, and I'm the firstborn child. Mm. Some of the things that, like, to this day that I know made an impact on myself and honestly on others around me, first and foremost, was, like, they made sure that I knew sports was second.
Mm.
If there was a championship game practice on a Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, I wasn't there.
Good for them.
They didn't
man.
Care if it was baseball, basketball, football. I never missed.
Yeah.
That was number one. Like, they made sure that that was the case, even to the point where I remember my dad took me from a baseball game. I'm in Little League. I think I was at the congregation in Moore. I'm not singing. And he says,
because you're upset about it?
Right. I was upset. He goes, son, if you think you're going to play more games, you better start singing. And so I had to sing in service. So like that right there is one, because it made me realize, because once I got to the league, that stuff dipped. I wasn't at services.
Yeah.
And I saw my faith waver, and I realized the importance of being around the brotherhood.
Yeah.
Because it's edifying, it's uplifting, it's admonishing.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is definitely just the foundation that they built.
Yeah.
And Proverbs, it talks about if you instruct your children, they won't depart from your ways.
Yeah.
Even though the house might waver.
Yeah.
But yet the foundation was set.
Yeah.
And there are so many things that my mother and my father instilled in me just from biblical principles, biblical knowledge, understanding how to work hard, being a man, things of that matter, that even in my adult life, when I was living that the way that I know I should, I came back to what was set at a very, very young age.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you're saying they set such a strong foundation that you knew deep down what was right, what was your priority. So even those times, like, I mean, like I did too, you know, whenever in, you know, my early 20s, really, you know, when I had all these influences and it was my first time away from home,
right.
You're not living the way you ought to. Like, you know what you should be doing.
Right.
And this, you plant that foundation, mm-hmm. you build that strong when they're young. And even when you waver, there are things you come back to.
Right.
You
know? And I think that's ultimately kind of some of the stuff that we even see throughout scripture about, I mean, one of Satan's tools to get the minds of us to be seared.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have a civil war going within us if we're not seared. And so that's what was going on at those times. Like, I had the foundations, the biblical principles that my mother and father instilled in me.
Yeah.
But then I had the worldly way and I was going back and forth internally.
Yeah.
Luckily, I didn't sear myself where I completely forgot the foundation.
Yeah.
And I give that a credit to my mom and my dad.
That's awesome. You know, is there a moment you can think of when you're, you know, every person I think that's raised in a Christian household, there's maybe one, some people, they say, well, it's not really one moment. Mm-hmm. What for you, were there any moments where you felt like your faith had become your own?
Yeah, I want to say there was one moment. It was probably gradual points.
Okay.
I mean, I probably hit some stuff in college where I understood. But I want to say, as I reflect now, it probably didn't come until I was almost in the league, out the league.
Yeah.
My mom said something to me a long time ago, because when I was in high school, I was a big, oh, I've never done this. I've never done that. I've never done that.
Yeah.
And my mom said, son, it's not about the never, it's about what you do.
Yeah.
Because she said, there might be a day where you can't say, I never done. What are you then?
Yeah.
And by the time I was in the league and I can't say those things no more.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a second. And I had to dive into my faith, because at that time that I never done was more based to pleasing my parents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I understand that.
It was probably definitely in my adult years where, you know, I took the foundation principles that my mom and dad taught me.
Yeah.
Study with my own self, let it be transformative as the word of God is supposed to do, converting the soul and then living for him.
I think a lot of people, you know, that are raised in Christian households have that experience where, you know, your parents are rightly instructing you, and you're, you know, like I've told this on the podcast, like the Super Bowl, when I was in high school, all my friends would go to my buddy Sam's house. And so Sunday evening, we had services at 6.
Right.
Well, Super Bowl starts at like 6:30.
Right.
So my dad would always take me over at like 5. And then he picked me up at like 5:50. Man, I used to drive me. I used to be so mad.
Right.
Because all my friends, it's like 5:50. Like, where are you going? I'm like, I got to go to services. And they all thought it was hilarious.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I'm getting in the car and mad with my dad. My dad was never hard on me. He just took me to services. I'm sure I said some things I shouldn't have said. And he just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And then after church is over, he'd take me back to the park. I'd always miss the first half.
Right.
Looking back as an adult, like, so what?
Right.
You know,
right.
Now I just want to go for the food. I don't even care, you know. But the best parts of the game I got to see. But he was instilling in me, this is the most important thing.
Right.
And I think that a lot of Christian parents that do that, they still have kids like us that, you know, get to their 20s and have like the Luke 15, the prodigal son, where it's like, I might not have asked for my dad's money, but like, you go off on your own.
Right.
And you're sort of not accountable to your parents anymore. You make mistakes.
Right.
And you come to a point where you realize, like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. And it brings you back to that, where for one of the first times you're making your faith your own.
Exactly.
You know, so I think a lot of us can probably look back to that.
Sure.
All right, let's talk about balancing faith and athletics. You know, you've already sort of touched on this, you know, and a lot of young athletes hear that sports have to come first if they want to succeed. It's interesting to me that, you know, I've talked to guys like you, I've talked to Norris Cole, who played, you know, on with LeBron and won an NBA championship. You know, it's interesting to me to see if you're talented enough and if you work hard enough, your experience is, hey, you can still miss services, or you can miss your games and still make it to the highest level.
Right.
You know, and it just seems, you know, pretty amazing to me. What did football ever tempt you to build your identity around football around Christ?
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's so much what the game is now. Because if you think about it, football and all sports are kids' games.
Yeah.
But once you start putting money behind it, once you put the fame behind it and the recognition and the praise and approval of men, it becomes very self-focused.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody now, their name is a brand.
Yeah.
Or we sign autographs.
Yeah, now in college with NIL.
NIL, name, image, and likeness is literally based upon the name of the individual. So football, even though it's a team sport, and it's my favorite sport because of how much of a team you have to be, there's so much individuality in it.
Yeah.
And it makes you, because you start watching your highlights, people start tweeting about you. I mean, not to bring it up again, but West Virginia, I was trending on Twitter because of my pick 6, you know, so shout out to West Virginia again. But
it's because our fans are probably hating on
it. Yeah, they definitely were. So, but it does
become. We're rabid football fans in college. We got nothing else.
Right.
You know, we got no professional.
Morgantown, right?
Yeah, we
got
the close thing is the Pittsburgh Steelers and Pirates, but college, man, that's all we got.
Right.
And we got Marshall. Shout out to Marshall.
Oh, yeah, Marshall, but they had their years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it just becomes so self-centered.
Yeah.
And something that I remember doing at the time to try and break the internal mindset.
Yeah.
Because we get very prideful. We get very arrogant.
Yeah.
But I remember telling people, because they'd be like, oh, that's Jordan Evans, football player. And I'm like, no, I'm Jordan Evans, who just happens to be good at football.
Yeah.
Because a lot of guys, their entire identity is in that.
Yeah.
And if you take a step back and look at it, it really makes no sense. The NFL stands for not for long.
Yeah. Okay?
I know everyone thinks the National Football League is not for long, yeah, but you have 3 years maybe.
Yeah.
And then you're never playing again. Why would you put your identity in something that's not everlasting?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it definitely tempts you, because that's literally what the whole game is about.
Yeah.
And even the guys that do good, I'm not saying, I'm not trying to take away from it, but yeah, it's still some form of self-promoting.
Hey, everybody, thanks for watching the Authentic Christian Podcast. If you like this show and you want to watch other shows like this, go to your app store, download the Gospel Broadcasting Network app on your phone, your tablet. You can also get it on Apple TV or Roku. And we have thousands of videos, everything from podcasts to sermons, all the way down to verse-by-verse studies through almost every book of the Bible. And if you like to read, we have a library of hundreds of books. I think it's over 300 or 400 books now that you can read for free on all kinds of different topics. Some are commentaries, lots of material to help you grow in your faith. So head over to the App Store, download the Gospel Broadcasting Network app, and we hope it helps you grow in your faith towards the Lord. Thanks for watching.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned like it's still a kid's game.
Right. You know, I watched a lot of the World Cup this year, mm-hmm, like for the first time ever. And it, like, I'll be watching it and I'm enjoying the games, but I will have these like moments of reflection where I'm like, wait a minute. Like, these guys are kicking a ball
right
around a field, trying to kick it into a net.
Right.
And it's billions of dollars, mm-hmm, and people flying all around the world. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting where it's not the violence of the Roman Colosseum.
Right.
But it's almost like you've got to keep them things in perspective, because, you know, I just think of the devil, and the devil is like, I will try and get people's focus off God in any way that I can. Mm-hmm. And I see this arena full of people who are just rabid sports fans. And I love sports, you know, mm-hmm, nothing wrong with being a sports fan, but I could see how the devil would say, like, no, put your identity in that. You know, like, you're a right football player. And when football's over, I'm sure you know guys, and maybe, you know, even struggle with it. I've joked with you about, like, I feel bad trying to, like, relate whenever you're like, yeah, I was in the NFL at the Super Bowl. And I'm like, well, you know, I remember after a high school AA West Virginia state tournament game. But I remember when my high school basketball ended, I thought my life was over.
Right.
You know? So I was an 18-year-old kid who had so much of what I thought made me who I was in this one thing. And then when it's over, you're like, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think that's really good to sort of say, look, you're trying to make sure that you're just, I'm Jordan Evans, who's good at football,
right,
and not I'm the NFL player is my whole identity.
Right.
You know, what would you say spiritual habits have helped keep you grounded throughout, mm-hmm, the time in college and the NFL? And, or if you're saying, well, there was a time where I wasn't really spiritually grounded, looking back, what are some things that you had before or now that you wish you would have had then?
Right. Well, definitely just staying in the word. I know, yeah, that sounds like cliche, but that's literally it.
It's true. It's the best one.
Yeah. It's staying in the word. So even when I wasn't faithful, I go in my study right now and you'll find journals of me, you know, writing notes from my Bible study I was doing individually.
Yeah.
So even though like I was still in the word, now my actions might not have been living in the faith.
Sure,
right. But
sure.
That
number, you're in the battle, you're battling right for, yeah.
Number two, I'm a huge, huge, advocate for this now more than I probably was then.
Yeah.
But isolation is not the answer.
Yeah.
And I'm a naturally kind of loner. I kind of like being myself and stuff like that. But at that time when I'm going through those things, I should have 100% been actively involved amongst the body of wherever the location I was in.
Yeah.
Those first few years, I could have definitely have done that.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm isolating, and the only influences that I'm ever going to be around is the people that are in the locker room.
Yeah.
Some good, some bad.
Yeah.
And, but I'm not by my brothers.
Yeah.
And the only time I might see them is once a week.
Yeah.
That's not enough.
Yeah.
And I.
And with the NFL, you're traveling all over the place.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
So that's one of those two. Obviously stay in the word, like, but you have to be around the body.
Yeah. You know, what were some of the greatest challenges that you felt like in the NFL? You know, were there ever moments when, you know, you were put like, what, I mean, whether it's in college or in the NFL or even after, you know, cause I know now some of your buddies are still playing.
Mm-hmm.
Are there things that, or moments where basically following Christ has put you at odds mm-hmm. with people in the locker room or on the coaching staff, or, you know, cause like we did an episode, think about Joseph in the Old Testament, you know, Joseph is, you know, his boss, his wife basically wants him to do something wrong. And he basically shows integrity and character and says, I can't do it, to be a sin against God. And he knew that this was probably going to bring him problems. Have there been times in your life where there have been things that people have sort of wanted you to do or pressured you to do mm-hmm. that basically standing for Christ has caused you problems or, mm-hmm. or, you know, put you out of the cool crowd or those sorts of things?
No, for sure. I mean, not only anything of doctrinal truth. So
yeah,
if we read in scripture that the, that, you know, remission of sins is found in the point of contact with the blood yeah. of Christ. And so if I was to say that, that would put you in opposition with a lot of believers in locker
even
rooms.
Other people who,
right.
Yeah.
That's one. So there was a couple of times where there was some discussions going about that. Some of the things I faced the most is because I didn't drink and I didn't smoke.
Yeah.
That because I didn't do those things, you're not cool, you're lame, you're no fun.
And so, then it's their goal to make you do that.
Right. And so I never fell into that. I might have fallen into some things where I would still go around those areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I could like get somewhat cool with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those were some of the biggest things I got made fun of. And I still won't forget to this day. I had a coach that straight up told me, you know, if you think you're gonna play in the league, you need to start drinking and smoking. And so I went up to him 5 years later and just said, hey, I just want you to know.
How do you like me now?
Yeah, I went 5 years in the league and I never had to do those things to make it. Man. And so, you know, there's a lot of pressures. And one of the things that I tell people, and this is, it's unfair if I was to sit here and act like, oh, I'm getting tempted like nobody else can understand. That, that's not true. Yeah. Temptation goes to everybody. Sin is sin. Nothing's new under the sun.
Yeah.
The issue or the difference is, again, you made a reference to it earlier about like how we like idolize sports.
Yeah.
I heard, I don't know if it was a preacher or somebody said, in 1,000 years from now, say America's in ruins and they come back and they come to search out the Americas.
Yeah.
And they start seeing these huge coliseums.
Yeah.
These huge stadiums, who they're going to think is their God. It's going to be around sports.
Yeah.
And
yeah, this is who they worshiped.
Exactly. They're going to see these huge things. And so sports is worshiped here. You're idolized here. You're putting these limelights.
Yeah.
And it's the accessibility.
Yeah.
What makes it so hard to fight against.
Yeah.
Like you have a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of time.
Yeah.
People throw themselves at you. You're held in the spotlights. You get treated in certain matters. And before you know it, you're used to that.
Yeah.
And you're thinking like that.
Yeah.
And you're expecting that. Yeah. Oh, I'm supposed to get the red carpet. I'm supposed to get treated this way. And that's where like, I mean, it just seeps in you and you're not even,
you got to fight
not even right.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think you're talking about the, like the access. I mean, now, especially in like the digital age, you know, you think about back when like, you know, Emmitt Smith played or Barry Sanders, it's like people couldn't like send them messages on Instagram.
Right.
You know, but it's like in the modern age, you've got these athletes and, you know, people, there's a lot, there are people who want to basically want to be around athletes because they got money. They want some of their money. They want some of their attention. And I can't imagine that. I mean, what I think about presidents, like there are people, if you gave a lot of people the option to meet the president or their favorite sports player, who would they pick? They pick their athlete. I mean, I think a lot. So athletics, it is sort of worshiped, you know, so I can understand that. Okay. I want to talk, you know, you talked about, you know, different disappointments, not getting invited to the combine, your injuries, you know, not being sure, the uncertainty of whether you're going to make the roster, you know, seasons or, you know, certain periods in a season where your play, you know, you feel like wasn't as good as it could have been. Like, what are some of the things, how do you stay focused in those moments? Like, did your faith help you? You know, like did you have any favorite Bible verses, mottos, anything like that that helped you stay focused in times of, you'd say like, you know, valley?
Right. No, for sure. My dad said an early motto in high school and it was out of Matthew 6:33.
Yeah.
Again, that was probably him trying to understand that, you know, he comes first and obviously in the context, the necessities that we need, clothing, shelter, food.
Yeah.
And that's how my dad raised me to know that's really all you need. And so that was the motto going out, you know, seek him first and everything's going to be handled.
Yeah.
Don't worry too much. Don't get too high. Don't get too low.
Yeah.
The next kind of motto that really isn't as much, maybe a biblical verse, but the principle of leaving no doubt.
Yeah.
He took it from the Remember the Titans movie.
Yeah.
Leave no doubt. But he'd always say that, like, leave no doubt that you're the best player on the field, but also leave no doubt on who you are.
Yeah.
So those were kind of the two foundational things that he set as a model for me as I kind of grew up. I mean, I think when I was in the, sometimes in the NFL, maybe in the UFL, I would put Matthew 6:33 on my tape.
Yeah.
Or something like along those lines, just to remember or to remind me. Because again, adversity is going to hit. They always say control what you can control. Yeah. Don't be upset what you can't control. And I would say that that's kind of what kind of made me level. I would have my highs and my lows. I would vent. I would talk about things. But I was able to shake it off and keep it pushing because I knew. And I do believe that fell back on my faith.
Yeah.
I do believe that was a principle set that, like, you know, I'm supposed to be content.
Yeah.
Whether I'm abounding or I'm low.
Yeah.
And that usually what kept me set. Once I became, I would say, more into the word, especially now.
Yeah.
You know, in Paul's letter to the Corinthians, and he talks about, hey, everything you're seeing around you is passing away.
Yeah.
That really has been like on the forefront of my mind. Hey, that stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So when I got cut from the UFL, the first time I ever got cut,
yeah,
was in a UFL spring league.
Yeah.
I remember driving home and I just started singing to God.
Yeah.
That's what gave me the comfort. I was in my mind. I was like, hey, I might be done.
Yeah.
Like this, that I my car's packed up.
Yeah.
I'm driving to Norman, Oklahoma. I might be done. And I just wanted to sing.
You know, I'm trying to put myself in that position where you've always fought as the underdog, but you've always succeeded.
Mm-hmm.
Things have always worked out.
Right.
And, you know, it's like God's been faithful to me, even though, you know, sometimes I didn't know what was, you know, there's always been these like questions of doubt, but God's always come through.
Right.
And, you know, some people would be, if you're not a Christian, you don't have your faith in God. You're just, I'm a football player. This is all I am. And,
right.
And all the people who wanted to be around me when I'm a football player, now that I'm not, are they still going to want to be around me? Or is no one going to say, oh, he's washed up.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have your faith in the right place, you could still say God's carried you through. But I think it's like your faith is probably really tested when you go through those trying times where you're injured. And now for the first time in your life, it's like, what does this feel like to get cut? Like I've never been cut before.
Right.
I've always been, you know, someone who, even if you weren't a starter, you're still playing and you're on the team and you're making the roster. And so then the first time you get cut and you think this might be it for football, but you had your faith.
Right.
So you weren't just the NFL player. You were the guy who was good at football.
Right.
But was a Christian. And yes, now, sir. Well, football might be over, but I'm still a Christian.
Right. And I think sometimes that's kind of the growth that you like, at least for me.
Yeah.
Because again, like I was kind of stacking on, and by, I think that was 2024. I mean, I was a whole different person.
Yeah.
I was a lot stronger. I was rooted. And so who knows how that would have happened in my unfaithful days, how I would have handled those moments.
Yeah.
Or what I would have said to the coach.
Yeah.
Or how I would have reacted. But because I was kind of, since it really started in 2021,
yeah,
when I blew my knee out, I started going on the spiritual journey of being, you know, I need to really rely on God.
Yeah.
And by 2024, I mean, I had grown significantly.
Mm.
And so it prepared me for that moment.
Yeah, spiritually and physically.
Yes, sir.
I was reading a bio and it was like 6'2", and then I get out in the parking lot, we're walking in, I'm like, he's not 6'2".
Yeah, I grew a little bit.
You're like 6'4" easily, you know.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so advice for some young athletes. Mm-hmm. Let's say that there's a 15, 16, 17-year-old high school athlete. He's a Christian. He's a football player. And he's basically able to sit across from you. What's some advice that you would give him as far as, what would you tell him about honoring God first?
Yeah, first and foremost, understand, as we said earlier, that God's first. Sports is just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
Help you get your school paid for, take care of your parents financially, maybe set yourself up to be financially successful. It's just a tool.
Yeah.
Just a tool. But we have to understand godly living.
Yeah.
Okay. So whether you're a Christian, whether you put on a helmet, because I used to have this alter ego and I put on a helmet. Yeah. It doesn't matter. You're a Christian first and only a Christian.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if you're a coach, a head coach, a scouting player, a starter, linebacker, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're a Christian. That's godly living and only godly living. I think Titus 2:11, verse 12, grace is teaching us to be godly.
Yeah.
We can't be Christians and profess the name of Christ and live ungodly. I don't care what your profession is.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, limit your distractions.
Yeah.
A lot of times the distractions is what's going to pull you over there. I used to be, this is going to sound bad when I say this, but like, you know, God has a verse in Corinthians 15 about bad company corrupts good morals.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like, I can show you that's not true. I can.
Yeah.
Good company creates good morals.
You know, I can fix them.
Right.
I've been there, man.
And it's completely wrong.
Yep.
And so again, surrounding yourself around godly people will help you promote godliness.
Well, the next question I was going to say is, and this maybe ties in, what's one mistake you see younger athletes make that you say, avoid this?
Right. You attach to the guys in the locker room who are the big time stars and stuff like that, but that doesn't make them the right company that you need to keep.
Yeah.
And so they fall into that. the young kids have to also understand that like the work that you were willing to put in to make it to a starter varsity,
yeah,
starting college, NFL, that and more,
yeah,
you have to put into your faith.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing that from a man who's done a lot in my life about, hey, whatever you put in,
yeah,
to sports, now transition that into your faith and watch
yeah.
you grow.
Yeah.
And I think our mindset should be like, oh, you know, I played the highest level. I played with the Tom Brady and stuff like that. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
But the goal is to get to heaven to yeah. be with, oh, that's Paul.
Yeah.
That's Peter. Yeah. You know, that's kind of the mindset and the goal that I think we should have behind that.
Well, it's so, like, you know, the Bible says bodily training is of some value.
Right.
You know, I think back, you know, of all the, you know, hours you've put in way more than I have of like the physical lifting, working out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm 41 now. And it's kind of like, well, it wasn't wasted time, but right. I understand that verse now.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, I've had more protein shakes and meal prep and chicken and rice and sweet potatoes than anybody can imagine.
Right.
But then you reach a point in time where you're 40, I'm 41, I start to see gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
And you start, like, your vision starts to go. And what it is a reminder that, like, yeah, this life's temporary.
Yeah, it fades.
You know? I'll tell you this story. I don't know if I took just a PTP by my knee.
Not really.
Okay, so I'm 41 now. I'm standing at PTP. And I'm standing talking to the security guy who I think was baptized last year. So I'm, like, just talking to him and asking him how he's been. So I'm just standing there for, like, 2 or 3 minutes. And apparently I had my knee too hyperextended. So after 3 minutes, I go to walk away and I'm like, oh, my knee hurt for like 2 days.
Uh-huh.
Like your body just starts aging. Mm-hmm. I mean, if my 18-year-old self would be like, oh, look at Unc. Like he's, you know, right. this old man now. But your body starts aging and you're reminded all of a sudden like, oh, wait, this isn't here forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this is a temporary, you know, dwelling place. We're just strangers, pilgrims on the way to our permanent home.
Right.
And that's where on Judgment Day, you know, maybe the Lord would say like, hey man, I enjoyed watching your football games, but I'm right. glad that you're yeah, you know, exactly. a faithful Christian.
We have to weigh which one is more important.
And yes.
Always the stuff that has a more everlasting effect.
Mm-hmm.
And one more thing, I think we had mentioned this that I wanted like, to say about advice that I would give is yeah. also about like, who's the standard?
Yeah.
Right. You know, that's the issue again, going back to the bad company corrupts good morals. When you start looking around and you set the people around you as a standard
mm-hmm.
or they look at you as a standard because of that, that can really change the viewpoint that you're supposed to have that the standard's Christ.
Yeah.
If I look at myself as a standard, a lot of people are going to look really, really, really good.
Yeah.
But we always look to Christ. We understand there's always things that we can continue to work on.
Yeah. You know, what would you say advice for parents? Like what advice would you give to parents to say, hey, look, you want your child to pursue excellence in sports. That's fine. But you want your child to be a Christian first and you don't want sports to become an idol. What advice would you give to them?
Well, first off, the parenting yourselves, y'all's walk is important.
Yeah.
Because before the elders, your friends, the deacons, the preachers can know you're a hypocrite, your children will.
Yeah.
So they have to see it in you first. You can't sit there and tell your kids to keep God first, but then they see you at home not doing the same.
Yeah.
So first off, the parents' walk has to be important. But two, you know, we are, as children, under the submission authority of our parents.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's like one verse in the Bible in Ephesians 6 that tells children, obey your parents.
Yeah.
It's simple. It's good for you. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, wield it correctly.
Yeah.
So when you set the precedent that, hey, this is the standard. Hey, this is the goal. Hey, guys, we're not missing services for practice or things that matter. That's the standard set. Don't waver.
Yeah.
Don't
your kid to appreciate it when he's younger.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Either way, you're not.
Yeah.
Fight through it. Don't try to appease us.
Yeah.
You know, if that's the case, you would give us cotton candy every meal and you know that's not okay.
That's right.
So in the same thing, the same with sports. So yeah, by all means, teach your kids hard work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
Teach your kids that he has to earn everything like in his work and things of that matter. But don't let that take precedent over his faith.
Yeah.
So if he's able to go and watch an entire Lakers versus Mavs game, is he able to sit through a sermon?
Yeah.
You know, things of that matter. And I think the parents can see that first.
Yeah.
And the moment your kid is not following that, get on it.
Yeah.
And you can use sports, as my dad did, as a tool for to training me. Like, hey, son, if you don't make good grades, you can't go play basketball. Or if you're not doing this, you can't go play baseball. Or you can't go play football. That's how they have to use it.
Okay, let me ask you this. So maybe switching gears, kind of. What would you tell somebody who maybe they are having success, maybe not in sports, but how do you guard against pride mm-hmm. when success brings praise and attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're, of course, from college football, when you're in Oklahoma, Norman, and you're the starting linebacker, I'm sure everywhere you went, everybody wanted to roll out the red carpet.
Right.
Then you go to the NFL and that's times 10.
Right.
You know how, and I'm sure even now when you go places, people find out you're in the NFL and they're mm-hmm. just like, oh, that's incredible. How do you guard against pride?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one because yeah. that's one of those ones that you just can't see on the surface.
Yeah.
And it just kind of creeps up and then you don't even realize that your mind's like that.
Yeah.
Which, like I said, happened to me.
Yeah.
And I can give example. Like, I just recently took a coaching job at my old high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was some things that happened early on that I was kind of like, oh, I think this should have been this way. And it's like, whoa, you're having way too much pride because of who you think you are. And that's wrong. I shouldn't think like that.
Yeah.
And so obviously you need to study what humility is in the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, humility is not, I think horribly of myself.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of myself less because I'm putting room for others.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest ways to get rid of, I guess, pride or that sense is to serve.
Yeah.
And to serve in any fashion. So make an effort to do the job that nobody wants to do.
Yeah.
And don't do it for praise, but do it for your own practice.
Yeah.
And so I would say to those kids that are doing that, you know, serve other people. Go to the kid who not everybody likes or isn't good. You be his friend.
Yeah.
You invite him to eat. You be around that. When the coach says to clean up, you always clean up. Mm-hmm. You know, things of that matter.
Don't think that you're too good to be the one that does certain
And then
tasks.
You have an opportunity to ever praise other people. You have to do it. Mm. My senior year in high school, I remember you could run for captain.
Yeah.
And I didn't run.
Yeah.
The head coach brought me in and asked me, you know, why didn't you run for captain? And I said, it'll mean more to them because the limelight can be on them. I have enough.
Yeah.
And so I knew if I was a captain, it would seem my chest, it could have upped me. And so I try all that I can to kind of refrain from anything that can boost my ego because it's already been boosted enough.
Well, you know, I think about Jesus in John 13, mm-hmm. like what's one of the last, you know, object lessons he leaves them is he does what I've heard is the job of the lowest slave, which was to wash feet.
Right.
And Jesus, the Son of God in flesh, gets down and starts washing their feet.
Right.
And Peter basically says, no, 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 Lord. And then he basically says, if I don't wash, you have no part with me. He's like, you'll wash my whole body.
Yeah, right.
But Jesus says, you won't understand what I'm doing now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously they knew he was washing feet. Jesus isn't saying like, you know, this is washing feet is an institution you have to do.
Right.
But the institute thing he was instituting is service.
Yes.
So you have the Son of God right before he's arrested and crucified. And one of the last lessons he teaches them is serving people.
Right.
So it's like if you look at the most humble person,
exactly,
Jesus, what's he do is he washes
and
feet.
And of all the people coming from heaven,
yes,
deity in the flesh, right before he serves his life, he's serving as, yeah, I mean, I think that's a prime example.
Let me ask you this. What legacy do you hope in the future, like, you know, your family, future generations remember about you?
Yeah. I simply could care less if they knew I played football.
Yeah.
I'm just a brother in Christ. Mm. And I want to be known for my Christian faith, my walk, my service, my benevolence, my help, and ultimately leading people to truth. And I can't stress that enough. I understand people gravitate towards the sports side. I'll use that as leveraging.
That's right. All things, all people.
Right.
It's like, hey, I played in the NFL. Let's have a study.
Exactly. But I'll be honest with you. I've never been big into like attention. That's why I always said I love football because I could put a helmet on. Nobody can see my face.
Yeah.
But I want to be known strictly for my faith because that's what God would ultimately see down and be proud of.
Yeah.
You know, I pray two things is one, I want to be, if God was to describe me, I want him to say the same thing he said about David.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I want to be the guy that God be like, hey, you thought about Jordan? Like you thought about Job? You know, those are the two things that if I walk in a room, hey, he's only concerned over the spiritual things. And I got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But that is where I'm trying to be headed.
Mm. I think those are great things to aspire to. All right. Last question. Thousands of Christians are watching this. Hypothetically, I'm not saying they are. Let's say thousands will watch this. Some want to play college sports. Some want to make a varsity team. You've got just one last thing to say to them that maybe their parents have told them, but you know how young guys are. Our dad tells us a good piece of advice and we're like, oh, our dad doesn't know anything. You know, what would you say, like parting words? What would you tell them about those who maybe not even athletes. Maybe they're musicians. They want to be in a band. You know, what's the last message that you want to leave them with? You've given us some good ones, so maybe I shouldn't ask you this question.
No, we can try to finish it out with this.
Yeah.
It's probably a handful of things, so let my mind race. But
yeah,
ultimately, there's two greatest commands. Mm-hmm. Love your God with everything.
Yeah.
And love your neighbor. Mm. Those will fulfill the law. That's number one. So above your musicians, above your sports, above anything, love God.
Yeah.
In doing so, hold fast to the truth. Jude 3, earnestly steadfast in the faith. Mm-hmm. And I love these two verses. People are going to have their own lives and their own trajectory, mm-hmm. whether it's in sports, whether it's in tech, whatever it is.
Yeah.
By all means, try to be successful so the more you get, the more you can give.
Yeah.
But in those two areas, remember, there's nothing that's worth your soul.
Yeah.
I looked up recently. I think the world in itself is worth 600 billion to 1.something quadrillion.
Yeah.
And that is not even a fraction worth of your soul.
Yeah.
And number two is Proverbs 23. I think 23 talks about buy the truth and don't sell it for nothing. And those are the things I would leave. So no matter where you're at in life, you keep them first. You stand fast in the faith. You hold to the truth and know that your soul is worth everything to God and not anything to this world. I think you'll be okay no matter where you're at.
Brother, that's great advice. Thanks for
hope it works out.
Yeah, man, appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Everybody, thanks for watching this episode of the Authentic Christian Podcast. I'm Aaron. This is Jordan Evans. As Jordan said, remember, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Buy the truth and sell it not. Be faithful. We'll see you back on the next episode of the Authentic Christian Podcast. Have a great day. See you later.
Thank you.
Thanks for watching the Authentic Christian Podcast. If you want to watch more content like the Authentic Christian, different programs, other podcasts that you want to learn about the Bible, I'd recommend you download our app, the Gospel Broadcasting Network app. Just get on the App Store. You also can find it on Roku, iTunes, etc. Search Gospel Broadcasting Network, download the app, and you can see the show, The Authentic Christian, and many, many other shows, dozens of shows, other podcasts, other shows that walk you through verse by verse through different books of the Bible, or even just different topical shows. So I would recommend you download the Gospel Broadcasting Network app. Thanks for watching.